You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
Majority Report with Sam Steeder. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS
and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, July 7th, 2015. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Rachel Cohen writing in the American Prospect, "When Charters Go Union." Also on the program today, still unclear, though it's getting a little bit clearer, what's going to happen with Greece as Germany in particular is insisting on punishing the Greeks for their immorality, which Thomas Piketty apparently has reminded the Germans, they participated in too. Who knew? Germans could make mistakes. Also up next for the Democrats, universal child care. Meanwhile, a report on the clown car. Donald Trump doubles down. Carly Fiorina apparently has no friends. And Rand Paul has an interesting theory about what percentage free we are. Meanwhile, former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder opens the door to perhaps a deal with Edward Snowden. And ISIS takes the lives of 45 civilians. We and the Saudi-led coalition take the lives of 45 civilians in Yemen. I'm sorry, I thought it was ISIS because that was what we were raving about the other day, about how they're going to be taking over the entire world because they had killed 20 people, I believe it was in Algiers, 23 people. But we just killed 45 in Yemen. I don't hear the same concerns about us. Meanwhile, Politico to unionize, perhaps. And Bill Cosby, well, he's a monster. I mean, I don't know what else to say. And the South Carolina Senate has voted to get rid of the Confederate flag. That will move to the South Carolina House. And we should also tell you, and we've got some audio in the fun half that will back this up, it's all the sign of the devil. I mean, it's just unbelievable what is going on with Satan and America these days. Satan's working. We have marriage equality. That was like number one on Satan's to-do list for a long time. That's the thing. I think since slavery, it was like way up there on his list to do. But you know Satan, he's a procrastinator. That's like one, you know, that's where that whole idle hands or the devil's play thing, that comes from that. He's like a procrastinator.
But when he comes through.
When he comes through, he really comes through, but it takes a long time for
him. He's a late starter. He's sort of like a guy, you know, he doesn't really kick in until like the seventh inning, and then he just dominates.
Yes, does very well at that point. All right, well, we're going to take a break in just a moment and speak to Rachel Cohen, of the American Prospect about when charters go union. But want to take this moment to remind you, and I know that we've talked about this before. Everyone knows, it's no surprise, I think, to longtime listeners and viewers of me, I don't like to shave. I generally shave when I know I'm going to be doing either a contributor spot on MSNBC or doing some videos for Ring of Fire. Other than that, I don't shave. And I have to say, though, and I'm not going to lie, I'm not going to shave more. But when I shave now, I do it with a razor I got through Harry's at harrys.com. First off, and I think it's also well known that I'm not profligate. I don't like to spend a lot of money. Instead of paying $32 for an 8-pack of blades with those, you know, in one of those big plastic things, like it's the, it's like that Superman cavern, like the ice thing that you got to rip at. You know what I'm talking about? Harry's is $15. You get a razor, some shaving cream, and 3 razor blades. And they send it right to your door. And if you go to harrys.com now and you've never gotten a Harry's shaving kit, use the coupon code MajorityReport. Get $5 off of that. $10 for a razor, shaving cream, and 3 razors. Noah's already on it. I'm seeing him already do it. And these are quality blades. They look good, too. It really is an amazing deal. So check it out. Harrys.com. Harry's is going to give you $5 off your first purchase from them if you use the coupon code MajorityReport. Harrys.com, coupon code MajorityReport at checkout for $5 off. And you can start shaving better today. Quick break. We'll be right back with Rachel Cohen. Ugh. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program Rachel Cohen. She's a journalist with the American Prospect. On her piece, which I believe will be running in the summer 2015 issue, but you can find it online. We will link to it. When Charters Go Union. Welcome to the program, Rachel.
Hi, thank you.
Now let's start with where unions were at the start of charters, the first idea of charters.
Yeah, so this sort of history gets lost in the current debates around education reform, but Albert Schenker, the president of the American Federation of Teachers, actually was the first person to propose the idea of charter schools in 1988. And Al Schenker envisioned these schools that were still unionized, still part of the public education system, but would be smaller and able to innovate and try new things and hopefully be sort of a testing ground where maybe new practices could be tested in these smaller schools that then could help improve, you know, the practices in the larger public schools if they proved to be effective. So that was the idea, and 3,000 delegates voted at the American Federation of Teachers conference in support of it, and they came up with the idea of the name charter schools because sort of charters are things that explorers receive to go test out new land and resources.
Oh, I had no idea about that. Now, what was also fascinating to me was that the unions were to have membership on the boards that oversaw the charters.
Right, that's right. And you can sort of learn a lot about this interesting history from a book called A Smarter Charter, which was written by Hallie Potter and Richard Kallenberg. And, I mean, the idea of this was thinking unions had to be part of the charter school project, both authorizing and on the school boards and in the classrooms, because they thought unions help guarantee job security and teacher voice, and without those two things, why would teachers feel comfortable enough to take educational risks in their classroom? If the risks didn't work out, then they might be punished and lose their jobs. So unions, were the thinking was that they would help create the security that could allow teachers to take more risks.
And so what happened?
there's debates over, you know, exactly what happened, but basically people who traditionally are not enthused with the idea of teachers' unions have really seized onto the charter school idea over the past two decades. The Walton family, for example, which part of the Walton Family Foundation, has kickstarted 1 in 4 charter schools around the country. They give a lot of money to the charter school, project. And it's no secret that the Waltons are no fans of unions. They're not fans of teachers' unions. They're not fans of unions in Walmart, And so part of what happened, but it's not just the Waltons. It's actually, there's both liberal and conservative proponents of charter schools came to see teachers' unions somehow as this thing that explains why public education isn't working. It's teachers' unions that are bludgeoning school districts with regulation and preventing schools from doing what it actually will take to help kids. And it's teachers' unions and poor teachers in the classroom and the teachers' unions that protect those poor teachers that explain why kids are falling behind and why there are these achievement gaps that we see between poor school districts and wealthier school districts. So basically this narrative has sort of grown stronger and stronger that it's the teachers' unions that are the problem, and charter schools must necessarily be union-free schools because that's is going to be what distinguishes them from the dysfunctional, I put that in quotes, public schools, because they say that if you don't have a union contract, then administrators and principals will be able to fire and hire teachers much more easily, and that's what it's going to take to get the right people in the classroom to give everyone, you know, the best education.
I know that's not what your piece is about, but that turn to me is fascinating, you know, as to whether or not it was I am of the mind that there is a significant percentage of charters, and I don't know what that is, but the impetus of which is, in fact, a strong anti-unionism and founded in a belief that the real problem is that we can't innovate, like you say, because of the sort of the legacy of teachers' unions. But how did that shift take place? In other words, was this opportunism by foes of unions? Was it that, I mean, at what point was it that charters went from an idea that was created by a union guy and ostensibly unionism of the teachers was an integral part of that because you wanted experimentation. And the only way to go out on that limb with experimentation and to involve sort of the educators in the process of developing these curriculum was to have them have union protectionism. At what point does that disconnect happen? Like, there seems to be this sort of like black hole that took place sometime in the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, there were definitely teachers at the outset of the charter movement that never trusted this. They thought this was going to lead to privatization. They were not supportive, you know, post Al Shanker's idea. So there was teacher union resistance even in the early beginning. However, the first charter schools that were created were unionized, and so, you know, it sort of. I just don't want it to sound like everyone supported it and then it changed.
Right.
There was definitely disagreement in the beginning. But I think that's it's really interesting now. I don't want to jump ahead, but I guess it's interesting to see that, you know, today, despite what maybe the political backers and the proponents and the foundations want charters to be, at the end of the day, there's teachers and workers in the schools that are saying, well, no, this is not going to work for us. We need a union if we want to do it. And so even though there has been this shift, I'd say, at the top level, you know, the teachers are sort of figuring out that they have some power to try to redirect that direction.
Let's talk about that. Because you start... You start with the story of Brian Harris, it's interesting because he starts as a special ed teacher at the Chicago International Charter Schools Northtown Academy. Chicago, of course, has been in many respects, maybe not the epicenter is the right word, but sort of one of the primary examples of teachers' unions following a social justice union model, I guess. So I don't know if that's a coincidence or what, but tell us about Brian Harris.
Right. So Brian Harris, he started teaching in 2007. He went to a non-union charter school. He told me he didn't care it was non-union because that just wasn't something he thought about, which is something I heard from a lot of teachers. I mean, I think sometimes charter backers will say, teachers come to this school because they don't want a union.
Hmm.
I think really teachers, many teachers go to charter schools because they want a job, you know, and these are open, charter schools are expanding and a lot of public school districts are cutting teaching positions. So, you know, it's important to sort of see through that narrative a little bit. But so Brian Harris was working in his school and he liked it. And what he said was that, you know, a year or so in, the CEO came and told them that next following school year, things are going to change. They're going to have to teach an additional class. They're going to lose certain time for teacher preparation, et cetera, et cetera. And basically, if you don't like it, you can leave. And so that was sort of a wake-up call for Brian. And this is the general theme I've heard from teachers all over the country when these things happen, where things start out okay, but then big changes happen and they realize like they're not able to be part of those shifts. So the AFT, the American Federation of Teachers, first launched their charter organizing national project around 2007. Bryan School became the first unionized charter school in Chicago in 2009. So they had this 13-month organizing drive. The school didn't want them to unionize. They fought back in various ways. But eventually they had a majority support, and so Brian's school formed a union. Today Brian's the president of the Chicago Charter Teachers Union, and there are 32 schools now in it, over 1,000 teachers, or nearly 1,000 teachers. And what you mentioned with the Chicago, so what you said about Chicago's teachers union is definitely heavily aligned with this social justice unionism model. And so part of the traditional teachers union is very skeptical of charter schools and expansion of charter schools while their budgets are being cut. So I think one of the interesting things I learned is how the relationship between Brian Harris's union and the traditional Chicago Teachers Union has evolved over the past couple of years. There was a lot of distrust.
And these are, we should say, these are both AFT unions, right?
They're both AFT unions, and it's sort of complicated because in some cities they can be in the same local. So in L.A. they're in the same local, but in Chicago, due to Illinois state law, they have to be in two separate locals, although they're both affiliates of AFT.
Okay, so I'm sorry, continue. Let's talk about this relationship because you have, I mean, and I think it's also, I mean, you point out that it's also the case even within the context of some charter schools. I mean, presumably, right? I mean, theoretically, we're thinking if I am part of a charter school teacher union, I am going to be, among other things that are going to be on my agenda, is going to be looking for more funding for charter schools because ostensibly this means that my union members are going to get more work, as it were. So, which is at odds a little bit with the agenda of the CTU, of the Chicago Teachers Union, public schools, because they're fighting the closure of their schools in many respects, and ultimately the supposedly freeing up of that money, I guess, to go to charters, right? I mean, so one would think that there'd be some natural friction there.
Yeah, and so there's definitely natural friction, and that is sort of being figured out now in different ways in different places. In Chicago, it's taken an interesting direction where basically the Chicago Teachers Union is not, the Chicago Charter Teacher Union is not saying we want more money to open new charter schools. They actually voted as a union in 2012, they passed a resolution saying we want a moratorium on opening new charter schools, and we want a moratorium on you know, more school turnarounds and closures until a system-wide study can be done to assess how this is all fitting in across the entire district. And what Brian Harris said to me is, like, we already have, you know, a bunch of charter schools. We have school choice now. Before we work on expanding further, we need to take a step back, a serious step back, and see, you know, what we have, what we don't have, what every student in Chicago needs. So they've taken a much more sort of systemic look and see themselves as part of the Chicago school system, which is not, you know, how everybody views it. But that's, so I think Chicago's model is very interesting and sort of challenges some of the ideas that, oh, charter school unions would just look out for charter schools. But that's definitely not how it's playing out in that city.
And what about other cities?
Well, like in Philadelphia, for example, Philadelphia recently had a vote earlier this school year whether to authorize new charter schools. And similarly, the charter school teachers, recognizing that in Philadelphia so many schools don't have nurses, they don't have toilet paper, they don't have librarians. So, you know, charter school teachers in Philadelphia now weren't saying, we need more money to open new charter schools. Like, I think there is a general sense in these cash-strapped district amongst teachers that we shouldn't be moving too fast. That said, there were a lot of charter school advocates and backers in Philadelphia who wanted new charter schools. So there's a tension, I think, between the movement and the teachers. But the real tension, I think, is that the unions haven't really figured out exactly how to strike the balance yet between organizing charter school teachers and curbing charter school expansion. So there are teachers, for example, a charter school teacher union president in LA in this network called Green Dot, who said, you know, I would never work in a in a charter school that was not unionized. So she's part of this group of workers who believes in the charter school mission. She likes working in her school. But the fact that Green Dot was unionized was a key reason why she went to work there in the first place. But she said to me that, you know, she's really turned off by any effort the NEA or the AFT makes to try to limit charter school expansion because she sees that as a curtailment of parent school choice, which is their right. And so she sort of sees efforts like that was made in Chicago as an attack on school choice, which she supports greatly for parents to have. And so those are sort of unsettled dilemmas, I think, that
where does someone like her, what is her perspective on the elements of the charter movement that are clearly clearly intent on destroying teachers' unions? I mean, when you look at, is it Moskowitz in New York who's done the success academies? The it's an explicit goal of hers, it seems to me, that to get rid of teachers' unions. So where does someone like this member of Green Dot or this worker at Green Dot, where does she sit on that divide? I mean, it's fascinating to me because I also would imagine there are people within her union, I guess, or who are in some respects against the union existence in and of itself.
Or against what? I'm sorry.
Against the, just the existence of the union in the context of charter schools.
I don't think that teachers in working at Green Dot are against charter school unions, because I do think that that is sort of one of the main reasons why they're there. But I think so this union teacher leader, for example, I think that she definitely supports the idea of union spreading to more charter schools. So right now there are a couple really large charter union drives in California. One is in L.A., and it's part of a network called Alliance, which I talked about in my piece.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is part of a virtual school network through called CAVA, which is the California Association of Virtual... Okay, I just messed up that acronym, but it's called CAVA. And so Green Dot's union, which she leads, has come out in strong support of both of those teachers. And so it's sort of creating new politics and new levels of solidarity on the ground between teachers in California and L.A., which I think, you know, is not the greatest news to the backers of charter schools who don't want unions to see these new groups, and the unions are hosting conferences to convene them together across the state and across the country. So I think that she is excited about these new forms of solidarity, but I think that there are divisions within those groups about what political work the union should be doing in state legislatures and such.
Right.
And what kind of school board members they should be supporting.
And so what are the there are, I guess, policy prescriptions as to getting more union involvement in charter schools?
I'm sorry, can you say that one more time?
Well, I guess you mentioned in A Smarter Charter that Potter and Collenberg recommend sort of a policy solution in terms of giving, setting up charters and sort of at that moment having
right.
people vote for or against, I guess, a union.
Right. I mean, so right now, Green Dot was unionized because their original founder, Steve Barr, wanted his charter school to be union. That's very rare. In other districts, sometimes, so for example, in Baltimore, all the charter schools are unionized, but not because there was any of these homegrown union campaigns that you're seeing in Chicago and New Orleans and Philadelphia, but because the state law says that charter schools have to follow the district's collective bargaining rights. So in there, that makes up about half of unionized charter schools across the country. The problem is that, I mean, it's not a problem, but it's a lot harder to organize your school, you know, in the middle of the school year. You have to figure out how to do this. It takes a lot of time. So Callenberg and Potter suggest, well, how about when you first open a school, you give the incoming teachers the chance to vote yes or no on whether to form a union. This whole charter project is premised on the idea of increased voice. Why don't you give teachers a chance to voice their opinion in the very beginning of the school as to whether they want to do that? So that's what they suggest. I asked Mina Reese, who's the president of the National Alliance of Public Charter Schools, which is sort of the big national, you know, charter advocacy organization, what she thinks of their idea. And she said she didn't like the idea because it sets the wrong tone. It pits workers against management, and, you know, this is a much more, you know, we shouldn't have to even bring that into the conversation at the very beginning.
Well, so it's not even it's not a question of at the beginning. It's she's saying that unions are problematic in that respect.
Yeah.
So, all right. So when we talk about the two major the two largest teachers unions, the NEA and the AFT, and what are they doing in terms of you've already mentioned some of the outreach, I think, that the that AFT is doing. But relatively speaking, is one or either of those unions, I mean, is this, I guess, for compare both their efforts in terms of unionizing charters for me, and also, is it in the context of their work and organizing, do they see this as a sort of a rear guard effort, or is it we're not going to oppose charters, we're going to instead turn our attention to organizing them?
Did you say a rear guard effort?
Yeah, a rear guard effort insofar as we're just covering our flank. In other words, if we can't stop the charter movement, what we're going to do is sort of organize to create some pressure on that flank, as opposed to, okay, we're done fighting the charter movement as our primary strategic goal. And instead, our strategic goal is going to be unionize these charters.
Mm-hmm. So charter schools were definitely more concentrated. I mean, I think they still are more concentrated within urban districts, and that's generally where the AFT operates. So the AFT sort of have gotten into this charter organizing game a little before the NEA. The NEA has more recently sort of formalized it as a priority a couple years later. Especially, and I think the NEA did that in part because now you see charter schools spreading more, you know, virtual schools and into the suburbs. So it's no longer this kind of urban district phenomenon, which sort of enabled NEA previously to not pay as much attention to it as now I think they reckon they have to. So I think that, I mean, you're definitely right when you say that they recognize that they're not going to beat all charter schools. The American public generally supports charter schools, although the American public also wants to see way more accountability than I think some of the leading charter advocates are very comfortable with. You know, so I think the unions are seeing, okay, if we're not going to be able to get rid of all charter schools, well, these teachers are still workers. Workers deserve unions. You know, you don't have to. You can hate the boss and still support the worker, kind of thing. They want to help teachers, because they believe teachers should have says in the workplaces, and a lot of teachers have. So it was interesting because I talked to teachers who approached the union before they approached them. So there are unions going into schools, but there's also a lot of teachers that are having a lot of difficulties and reaching out to unions themselves and saying, "Can you help me? I'm really frustrated." So I think that's a really important reality. I think that it's still sort of this work in progress, and as they sort of create more power within each city, they're going to sort of see, well, what can we do now? And I think that we're just starting to get there in Chicago and LA. If the Alliance campaign succeeds, Alliance is the largest charter network in LA. It has a lot of, you know, really powerful education reform bigwigs on its board, a former mayor, I think, and if that campaign succeeds, that's going to really sort of change some of the local politics in education in LA. So I think that to some extent, the unions don't really know exactly where they're going to go, because mm-hmm. they don't know yet what they might be able to do. So they're focusing now, I think, on organizing and then doing that.
That's fascinating. Well, Rachel Cohen, the piece is When Charters Go Union. It is in this at the American Prospect. We will, of course, link to it at majority.fm. Thanks so much for your time today.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Boop, boop. Fascinating. And I guess, you know, the idea of the unions just sort of seeing how this works and then maybe developing a strategy later is also interesting to me. It's also fascinating to know that the entire charter movement emanated out of, if not directly out of the union movement, but out of a union leadership. I mean, I think, you know, I certainly have always felt the value of charters is in providing new examples of new methodologies that could be scaled to public education. And the problem is at some point over the past 30 years, I guess it is now, maybe a little bit less, charters, instead of becoming a means in which to improve the education of public schools, broadly speaking, has become rather an end in and of itself. Or, I guess, a little bit more, to put it in a little more nefarious light, a means in which to destroy teachers' unions and to privatize education. I have a feeling there's a little bit of both. I mean, not necessarily amongst the same people, but that's the essence of the charter movement, it seems to me. Those two sort of, not quadrants, but halves. And I don't know, maybe it's three quarters and one quarter. Folks, let me remind you that this program relies on your memberships to thrive and continue. Your memberships support the free show. And then as a bonus, we give you an extra 50 minutes. I don't think we've kept a member show to 50 minutes in, I feel like, weeks. I don't know what's going on.
Just overactive generosity.
But in the main, we try and keep it to 50 minutes, but usually it's an hour or more. We should tell you that Matt is not here today, and it was unexpected. Now, I don't know if that means he's having his baby.
He's just taking advantage of the
situation.
Do you think
so? Yeah. You think Matt is having false labor?
Actually, he's having psychosomatic syndrome.
I have to say, false labor is exactly what I have, how I have characterized what you do here, Michael.
Really?
Yes, false labor.
That's interesting, because I was just thinking of false labor in you. So false. Interesting that our minds go to similar places.
Yes. Well, yeah. I mean, look, one would hope that you'd be able to come labor. Up with something better than...
No, I literally come
I
up with
am
it before
rubber,
you
are glue.
In.
What you say to me sticks to you.
Yeah.
I mean, can you not... I mean, you could... I mean, come on. You
well,
can do a little better
there's
than
a couple
that.
Of places. There's the Jew thing. There's the male menopause. There's the Asperger's
right.
jokes.
Nothing. Nothing. You got nothing today.
Yeah.
False labor. But like I said,
false
Matt is
labor.
Not.
I don't even understand that joke. Though.
Okay, there we go. Noah does.
Noah, if you, as I said, you don't have to pretend he's funny. It's fine.
Please don't put me in the middle of this.
Yeah.
You don't have to pretend he's funny. That's
Noah's
all.
Terrified now. All right. So it is your it's your memberships that make this show possible. Also, if you drink coffee, JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. We had someone IM us yesterday. I can't remember who it was, who said, like, I just got some of the Majority Report blend. It is effing great. And you get the free shipping. You get the 10% off with the coupon code Majority. What could be better? Also, if you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our link at MajorityReportKickback.com. We get a kickback. And leave us a review. Look at how much I'm asking. You know, I'm getting all this in because we're going on vacation.
Read a review.
Oh, yeah, I should. I will read a review. And I'm going to launch it exactly how I go to majority.fm/review. Then I get the iTunes preview. Then I pick up, I click view in iTunes. It says launch application. That's the name of, that's what we call iTunes. It's an application.
Very pedantic.
right? Mm-hmm. Then I say don't download the latest version of iTunes because they constantly updating and it's annoying. And then they change the look of it, and I don't like that either. So I'm going to read the most recent review, July 6th. Frustrated by the usual 6 or 7 minute interviews on cable and radio, tired of hearing, quote, this is a fascinating discussion, but we're up against a hard break. Just when things start to get interesting, do you want more policy and less horse race? Then the Majority Report is for you. Sam and his guests have 40 to 50 minutes to explore a topic. You can also count on the guests to be policy wonks at the cutting edge of whatever their field is. And there are no chess clocks on this show. Making a reference to Walter Block.
Very good.
Thank you for that review. Pop four. All right, folks. Going to take a quick break when we come back. Rand Paul is talking about how you get more freedom. According to Rand Paul, Mogadishu, I guess Somalia, will be like 100% freedom.
Yeah, except, you know, I mean, we all know about Mogadishu.
No, I don't know what that is.
Should we take one?
Race joke. Rand Paul race joke.
Oh, I got you. Okay. Also, coming up in the fun half, we'll talk about Eric Holder. So just, you know, start. There's like a little test balloons, I think, that are going up about Snowden. Politico. Will they be unionizing? Imagine. That is fascascinating.
But we're up against the clock.
Well, we're up against the clock. So we're going to have to. Just going
to
come back.
Stick with us to the better half, and we'll get right back to it. We'll Politico.
Speaking of, this
unionize.
Is a fascinating conversation. Did you understand that the devil has taken over this country?
I was aware of that.
Okay, yeah, no, I knew you were aware.
Well, because I came, you know, Massachusetts Jew thing. We were on that devil taking over the country for a long time.
And I think we will also be doing a theatrical representation of what we imagine happens when Carly Fiorina, who apparently is having incredible fundraising woes, what happens when she asks her wealthy friends for money. We should brand that segment.
Anybody knows who Carly Fiorina is, which I'm sure this audience does, you high information people, you'll find it very funny.
Yes.
All right.
We'll be right back after this.
Say no.